Welcome to story time
with David and Mommy and Thacko and all the rest of the stuffies.
Yes, everybody. And David is a little crazy, but he can handle it, right?
Even though I have a chest full of gold.
All right, chapter 12 of Kidnapped. I hear of the Red Fox. Oh, I wonder who or what the red fox is.
A red fox is a fox that looks red.
Yeah, you're right. Before we had done cleaning out the roundhouse, a breeze sprang up from a little to the east of north. This blew off the rain and brought out the sun. And here I must explain, and the reader would do well to look at a map. On the day when the fog fell and we ran down Alan's boat, we had been running through the Little Minch. At dawn after the battle, we lay becalmed to the east of the Isle of Canna, or between that and the Isle of Eriska in the chain of the Long Island. Now, to get from there to the Linnelock, the straight course was through the narrows of the Sound of Mull. But the captain had no chart, and he was afraid to trust his brig so deep among the islands. And the wind serving well, he preferred to go by west of Tyree and come up under the southern coast of the great Isle of Mull. All day the breeze held in the same point, and rather freshened than died down, and towards the afternoon a swell began to set in from round the outer Hebrides.
Bob?
Yes?
Can you move the camera while you keep an eye on me?
I can make it go, like, forwards and back and turn around. Like, if you were over by the door, I could move it so I could see you.
But what if I was going to get a drink?
You were going to get a drink?
Yeah.
I usually don't turn the camera on unless I'm worried that you're not safe. No. It's just there as an extra protection.
But we already have alarms.
You're right, we do. Mommy likes to be extra safe.
You already are safe.
Our course to go round about the inner isles was to the west of south, so that at first we had this swell upon our beam, and we were much rolled about. But after nightfall, when we had turned the end of Tyree and began to head more to the east, the sea came right astern. Meanwhile, the earlier part of the day, before the swell came up, was very pleasant sailing, as we were in a bright sunshine and with many mountainous islands upon different sides. Alan and I sat in the roundhouse with the doors open, one each side, the wind being straight astern, and smoked a pipe or two of the captain's fine tobacco. It was at this time we heard each other's stories, which was the more important to me, as I gained some knowledge of that wild highland country on which I was so soon to land. In those days, so close on the back of the great rebellion, it was needful a man should know what he was doing when he went upon the heather. It was I that showed the example, telling him all my misfortune, which he heard with a great good nature. Only when I came to mention the good friend of mine, Mr. Campbell, the minister, Alan fired up and cried out that he hated all that were of that name. "Why?" said he. "He is the man you should be proud to give your..." Wait, no, sorry, that was David. "Why," said I, "he is a man you should be proud to give your hand to." "I know nothing I would help a Campbell to," says he, "unless it was a laden bullet. I would hunt all of that name like black cocks. If I lay dying, I would crawl upon my knees to my chamber window for a shot at one." "Why, Alan," I cried, "what ails ye at the Campbells?" "Well," says he, "you ken very well that Campbells. I am..." The Campbells, yeah.
So I thought you said Campbell.
No, Campbells.
Campbells?
Campbells. Remember David's friend at the beginning of the book was named Campbell, and he was a minister, and he told Davy about his uncle's house.
Yeah.
And told him to go, told him that he could go there if he wanted to. That was his friend in his town where he came from. And so he was telling Alan about his friend, Mr. Campbell, and Alan is claiming, like he's saying, "Oh, I hate all the Campbells." So I guess they're a family, a big family. "Well," says he, "you ken very well that I am an Appin Stewart, and the Campbells have long harried and wasted those of my name. Aye, and got lands of us by treachery, but never with the sword," he cried loudly, and with that the word brought down his fist upon the table. But I paid the less attention to this, for I knew it was usually said by those who have the underhand. "There's more than that," he continued, "and hold in the same story. Lying words, lying papers, tricks fit for a peddler, and the show what's legal over all, to make a man the more angry." "You are that so wasteful of your buttons," said I. "I can hardly think you would be a good judge of business." "Ha!" says he, falling again to smiling. "I had got me wastefulness from the same man I got me buttons from, and that was me poor father, Duncan Stewart. Grace be to him. He was the prettiest man of his kindred and the best swordsman in the Highlands, David, and that is the same to say in all the world. I should ken, for it was him that taught me. He was in the Black Watch when at first it was mustered. And like the other gentlemen's privates, he had a gill at his back," which is a Highland chief's servant, "to carry his firelock for him on the march. Well, the king, it appears, was wishful to see the Highland swordsmanship, and me father and three more were chosen out and sent to London town to let him see it at its best. So they were had into a palace and showed the whole art of the sword for 2 hours at a stretch before King George and Queen Carline and the butcher Cumberland, and many more whom I have no mind. And when they were through, the king, for all he was rank usurper, spoke them fair and gave them each man 3 guineas in his hand. Now, as they were going out of the palace, they had a porter's lodge to go by, and it came in on my father that he was perhaps the first private Highland gentleman that had ever gone by that door, and it was right he should give the poor porter a proper notion of their quality. So he gives the king's 3 guineas into the man's hand, as if it was his common custom, for the 3 others that came before him did the same, and there they were on the street, never a penny the better for their pains. Some say it was the first to flee the king's porter, and some say it was another, but the truth of it is that it was Duncan Stewart, as I am willing to prove with either sword or pistol, and that was the father that I had, God rest him." "I think he was not the man to leave you rich," said I. "And that's true," said Alan. "He left me to me bricks," which is another word for trousers, "to cover me and little besides. And that was how I came to enlist, which was a black spot upon me character at the best of times, and would still be sore job for me if I fell among the redcoats." "What?" cried I. "Were you in the English army?" "That I was," said Alan, "but I deserted to the right side at Preston Pains, and that's some comfort." I could scarcely share this view, holding desertion under arms for an unpardonable fault in honour. But for all I was so young, I was wiser than say my thought. "Dear, dear," says I, "the punishment is death." "Hi," said he, "if they get their hands on me, it would be a short shrift in the long toe for Alan. But I have the King of France's commission in me pocket, which would aye be some protection." "I misdoubt it much," said I.
"King of France?"
"I have doubts myself," said Alan dryly. "Good heaven, man," cried I, you are a condemned rebel and a deserter and a man of the French kings? What tempts you back into this country? It's bravery of Providence." "That's very cool, honey. Yeah, I like it. Well, you see, I weary for me friends and country," said he. "France is a braw place, no doubt, but I weary for the heather and the deer, and then I have a bit things that I attend to. Whiles I pick up a few lads to serve the King of France, recruits, you see, and that's aye a little money. But the heart of the matter is this business of me chief, Ardshiel. "I thought they called your chief Appin," said I. "Aye, but Ardshiel is the captain of the clan," said he, which scarcely cleared my mind. "You see, David, he that was all his life so great a man, and come to the blood and baron by the name of kings, is now brought down to live in a French town like a poor and private person. He that had 400 swords at his whistle, I have seen with those eyes of mine, buying butter in the marketplace and taking it home in a kale leaf. That is not only a pain, but a disgrace to us of his family and clan. There are the Barnes Forby, the children, and the Hope of Appin, and that must be learned, their letters, and how to hold a sword in that far country. Now the tenants of Appin have to pay a rent to King George, but their hearts are staunch, and they are true to their chief. And what with love and a bit of pressure, and maybe a threat or two, the poor folks scrape up a second rent for Ardshiel. Well, David, I'm the hand that carries it." And he struck the belt around his body so the guineas rang. Do they pay both? Cried I. "Hi, David, both," says he. "What? Two rents?" I repeated. "Hi, David," said he. "I told a different tale to yon captain man, but this is the truth of it, and it's wonderful to me how little pressure is needed. But it's the handiwork of me good kingsman and me father's friend, James Stuart, that is, Archdale's half-brother. He it is that gets the money in and does the management." This was the first time I'd heard the name of that James Stuart, who afterwards so famous at the time of his hanging. I took little heed at the moment, for all my mind was occupied with the generosity of these poor Highlanders. So what he's saying is that in his place where he's from, there is a guy who's in charge of the town, and there's a guy who was in charge of the town, and the guy who was in charge of the town was persecuted by the King of England, and he had to move to France so that he would be safe, and now he's living like just a normal guy and not a king or a ruler in France, and the people in his town love him so much that they pay rent to the guy who is in charge of their town, and they also send money over to France to help this other guy who used to be in charge of their town.
Who's that?
Allen's. I think we might not read this whole chapter tonight, honey.
What?
Might not read this whole chapter tonight. Let's just read and find out who the Red Fox is. "I call it noble," I cried. "I'm a Whig or little better, but I call it noble." "Hi," said he, "you're a Whig, but you're a gentleman, and that's what does it. Now, if you were one of the cursed race of Campbell, you would gnash your teeth to hear tell of it. If ye were the Red Fox." And that name, his teeth shut together, and he ceased speaking.
I think speaking. The Red Fox is an old name for red coats.
I've seen many a grim face, but never grimmer than Alan's when he named the Red Fox. "And who is the Red Fox?" I asked, daunted, but still curious. "Who is he?" cried Alan. "Well, I'll tell you that. When the men of the clans were broken at Culloden, and the good cause went down, and the horses rode over the fetlocks to the best blood of the north, Archdale had to flee like a poor deer upon the mountains, he and his lady and his bairns. A sour job we had of it before we got him shipped, and while he still lay in the heather, the English rogues that couldna come to come at his life were striking his rights. They stripped him of his powers, they stripped him of his lands, they plucked the weapons from the hands of his clansmen that had borne arms for 30 centuries, aye, and the very clothes off their backs, so that it's now a sin to wear a tartan plaid, and a man may be cast into a gaol if he has but a kilt about his legs. One thing they couldna kill, that was the love the clansmen bore their chief. These guineas are the proof of it, and now in there steps a man, a Campbell, a red-headed Colin, a Glenure." Is that him you call the Red Fox?" said I. "Will you bring me this brush?" cries Alan fiercely. "Aye, that's the man. In he steps, and he gets his papers, from King George to be the so-called king's factor on the lands of Appin. And at first he sings small, and his hail fellow well met with Seamus, that's James of the Glems, me chieftain's agent. But by and by, that came to his ears that I have just told you, how the poor commons of Appin, the farmers and the crofters and the bowmen were wringing the very plaids to get a second rent and send it overseas to Archdale for his poor barns. What was it you called it when I told you? I called it noble, Alan, said I. And you little better than a common Whig, cries Alan. But when it came to Colin Roy, the black Campbell blood in him ran wild. He sat gnashing his teeth at the wine table. What, should a Stuart get a bite of bread and him not be able to prevent it? Ah, red fox, if ever you hold a gun end, then the Lord have pity on ya. Alan stopped to swallow down his anger. Well, David, what does he do? He declares all the farms to let, and thinks he and his black heart I'll soon get the other tenants that'll overbid these Stuarts, and the Mackles and the Macrobes, all these names in my can, David. And then thinks he Arsdale will have to hold his bonnet on a French roadside. So what he's saying is that, you know, that thing I told you where they were sending two, they were paying twice. They were paying one rent to the guy who was in charge of their town currently, and then they're sending extra money overseas, or over to France for the guy who used to be in charge. This guy, the Red Fox, found out about it, and so he said, okay, well, I'm going to fix that. I'll just make all the houses. I'm going to say all the houses in this town, other people can make offers on them and live in them. And if they're willing to pay more money than all those people who already live there, they're going to be out on the street. They're not going to be able to send money overseas. And that guy in France is going to have to go be a beggar. That's what the Red Fox said.
That's bad.
Yeah. It is bad. It's pretty mean. Well, said I, what followed? Alan laid down his pipe, which he had long since suffered it to go out, and set two hands upon his knees. "Hi," said he, "you'll never guess that. For these same Stuarts and Macalls and Macrobs that had two rents to pay, one to King George by stark force and one to Arsdale by natural kindness, offered him a better price than any Campbell in all broad Scotland, and far he sent seeking them, as far to the sides of Clyde across the Edinburgh, seeking and fleeching, and begging them to come. Where there was a Stuart to be starved and a red-head hound of a Campbell to be pleasured. Well, Alan, said I, this is a strange story and a fine one, too, and Whig as I may be, I am glad the man was beaten. Him beaten? Echoed Alan. It's little you ken of Campbells and less of the Red Fox. Him beaten? No, nor will be. Till his blood's on the hillside. But if the day comes, David, man, that I can find time and leisure for a bit of hunting, there grows not enough heather in all Scotland to hide him from my vengeance. All right, honey, we're going to pause for there, and we'll finish the chapter and maybe read a little more tomorrow. Okay, honey? Okay. David, did you hear me? Okay, I'll take that as a yes. All right, good night, podcast listeners. Thanks for listening. Bye. David says bye.
Bye.
Bye.